Ever heard of a clustermer? It's the result of marketers grouping customers with different behaviors into one big mess. But with MailChimp, you can use real-time behavior data to personalize emails for every customer based on their browsing history and buying behavior, turning your customers into customers. Intuit MailChimp, the number one email marketing and automations brand. Visit MailChimp.com/personalize for more information. It's based on competitor brands, publicly available data on worldwide numbers of customers in 2021-2022. Availability of features and functionality vary by plan, which are subject to change.
I'm not completely convinced that there's going to be this crisis for the sector come 2024. What this all really depends on is high performance, efficient, low power consuming AI chips. And that's where a lot of investment is going into.
Hey gang, it's Tuesday, October 17th. Jacob Garger and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Intuit MailChimp. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two folks, both of them write for our connectivity and tech briefing. One of them is a senior analyst based on the right-hand side of the country in New York City. It's Garger Sevilla.
Hi Marcus, hi Jacob, happy to be back.
Hey chap, good to see you. The other one is on the opposite side of the country, on the left-hand side, based in California. It's one of our analysts. It's Jacob Bourne.
Hey, Marcus. Hey, Gajan. Glad to be here.
Good to see you. Today's fact. What do you guys think are the most common passwords? Good to guess what you think one of the most common passwords is. What would you say?
Password.
Password seconds. Yes.
Yeah.
According to...
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Birthdays.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Is four
names of significant others, family members.
It's not that complex, unfortunately. You guys got it. So password is second. So this is according to a report from Safety Detectives, and the most hacked password is password seconds. That's the second most common password. What the hell are we doing? Why even have a password? Right. Just let people in. Rather ironically, let me in. Is that was 22nd on this list. Garger, you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That would be the fourth most common. The most common is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Hello.
I know. Hello. Didn't see that coming. The third most common is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It's just variations of that. What is happening? All the ones. That's the eighth most. Dragon. I didn't see that coming. Superman? Okay. Yeah, they're not good, is the point here. It's not great. But Garger, weren't you just wrote a piece about how passwords might be going away?
Yeah, that's right. Google's hoping, and I think it's an industry-wide push to move to passkeys, which means you'll use devices as a form of authentication rather than a password.
Thank God. This is a disaster.
Right. That can't come soon enough.
There's clearly a need for it with those kind of passwords.
Yeah. IT will be horrified to learn most of my passwords are on this list. Anyway, today's real topic, generative AI adoption and what Americans want from it. Today, in the lead, we'll cover generative AI. How many folks have adopted it? We'll look at what regular American folks are expecting from artificial intelligence and what 2024 holds for generative AI. And then we move to another news. We're talking about ChatGPT now giving real-time information. What does that mean? And then PCs with AI inside of them. What are they going to look like? We start, of course, with the lead, and we're talking about AI adoption for marketers. A recent Adweek article from Stephen Lepetak explains how marketers have been adopting AI, citing a recent survey from Gartner. And so there's three stats in here, which I'll start with to set the table. Number one, using generative AI for the funnel. That's what folks have been up to. Half of marketing leaders said they are already using generative AI tools within their funnels. 43% aren't right now, but plan to. Only 6% said no, thank you. Number two, content marketing was the number one function using generative AI, with 73% of folks saying that, 43% product marketing, 37% customer experience. And then the third stat here, half of folks were using it, generative AI, for content production, drafting social media, and also ad copy. So, gents, what stands out to you when it comes to how marketers have been adopting Gen, I'll just say Gen AI. I can't keep saying generative the whole episode. Gen AI at this point.
Yeah.
I think for me, the key thing here is that we're going to see a lot more content that is AI generated. You know, so like recently, Adobe released a new tool, Firefly 2. So that competes with DALL-E and Midjourney. So this creates ads and marketing images on the fly. And, you know, they're using thousands of stock photos and assets as the training models for these. And so, you know, we can expect as marketers and content creators continue to adopt this, that they will be leaning on this technology. But the question here, though, is will authenticity be an issue, especially with regards, you know, to marketing and honest marketing, right? The images do look very professional. They look very polished. But the fact is that they're not real. That's not a real product or a real model at that point. So
yeah, I agree with Gajo's take. It's certainly not a silver bullet for the marketing industry. At the same time, it makes a lot of sense that adoption has been bullish among marketers. I mean, just the efficiency and creativity that, you know, generative AI can give to the sector is, I mean, personalization, I think, is one of the biggest areas. I mean, you have AI that can, on the one hand, kind of analyze heaps of consumer data and then turn around and use that consumer data to craft personalized content that targets, you know, an individual consumer. So it's kind of a marketing dream in a way, if you think about it. Really, you know, it's ads, emails, images, any kind of content can be personalized to an individual. But there's a pitfall to that too, though, because that personalization can also come across as creepy, you know, to consumers that don't want to be analyzed, they don't want to be tracked. And that's exactly what this does. So it's really, it's kind of walking a tightrope for marketers to do this in a way that, you know, instills trust and doesn't, you know, make people feel very uncomfortable.
One of my questions was going to be, yeah, who's going to be the first advertiser to face major backlash for using AI in ads? Because in August, customer experience consultancy User Testing found that folks are suspicious about AI being used in targeted ads. 70% of people were concerned about their privacy and personal data being used. Nearly 60% felt anxious about it being used specifically by marketers. So I'm wondering if we're going to have some big kind of splashy headline case where there is an advertiser who has used AI and they get a lot of blowback because of it.
I think so. I think it's just a matter of time. We've seen that for sure.
So folks adopting generative AI, a lot of folks experimenting with it, whether that's experimenting and then rolling it out, just experimenting, planning to experiment. It seems like there are a small number of folks who haven't really done anything with it at all when it comes to marketers. The main benefit folks expected to see from their generative AI deployment was improved speed to market, followed by being able to create more content in the same amount of time. So that's what marketers were hoping to get out of their generative AI deployments. The main barriers were not having the expertise needed and unforeseen security threats.
And I would add just a reduced need for overhead.
To the benefits.
Cost cutting, essentially.
So there are some concerns, though, about generative AI, and I'm wondering how the kind of skeptics' concerns are going to be alleviated. One of the main concerns is just too much choice. There are currently over 360 generative AI companies, according to CB Insights. Do we see that continuing to go up in the next 6 months or to a year, or is that kind of on a very steady or a very expedited downward trajectory at this point?
I think with all the investments pouring in, there might still be a peak to this. And, you know, we probably haven't seen that slowdown happen yet.
Okay.
But what is happening on the other end, though, is, you know, people currently have to go out of their way to find generative AI solutions. But by next year, a lot of these will be integrated into the tools they use already. Big tech is already co-opting a lot of these features into various tools and apps. And so whether they want to or not, it'll be at their disposal. So I think that will just make it more commonplace. And that should push up the usage as well as level off all those startups that are basically one-trick pony AI companies.
I mean, we haven't seen the slowdown yet. There's still a lot of hype and excitement around this technology. But at the same time, I think the skeptics' concerns are very valid. There's a lot that goes wrong with generative AI that could impede the trillions of dollars in economic value that's expected from becoming a reality. I mean, it hallucinates, it makes up stuff, it gets things wrong. People can bypass safeguards. There's bias in the output. There's all kinds of things that make the tool less useful than what it's sometimes advertised as. And the problem is that it's really difficult for tech companies to address and overcome these challenges. And even within tech companies, there are people that are really concerned about this, including at Google. And of course, you know, we're talking about the leading tools like ChatGPT, and people are also concerned about the sometimes what's perceived as a varying level of performance. Like, you don't log in and get the same type of performance every time you use it, which is an issue for people that are really relying on it to do their jobs on a daily basis, right?
Do you think that's going to change, though? Because you have to kind of see if they work properly before you can start using them. Trisha Ostwall of Adweek was giving an example saying digital marketing agency WinClap received 40 new pitches for generative AI tools in Q3 alone. After testing, the agency discarded over 60% of them due to, as you mentioned, issues like hallucinations. And one of the things we're going to talk more about, the kind of rules that we can expect to see from AI in an episode coming out this coming Monday. But one of the things that we're going to talk about on the episode is the idea of, you know, do these companies need these tools to be approved before they hit the market? Because it doesn't seem like they are. And that seems like it's a problem with adoption, or worse, things going bad.
And to add to that, I mean, AI regulation is proving to be extremely complex. You know, the government has tried to make suggestions, but they can't even sort of, you know, find a starting point. And it's been offloaded to the companies themselves, which, you know, as we all know, they will regulate as best suits them, meaning you can't really expect an industry-wide initiative to come from that at this point.
I mean, it's a sticking point when, you know, AI companies can't ensure a consistent product on a daily basis because it's such a volatile technology. At the same time, because it's difficult to fix that, and because it doesn't seem like generative AI is going anywhere, well, then what happens? Where do we go from here? So there's, I think the company, you know, tech companies will be investing a lot of money in trying to overcome these challenges, but, you know, let's not hold our breath.
Gaja, to your point about self-regulation, there was a study done by AI Policy Institute, and over 80% of people saying that they do not trust AI companies to self-regulate, and that 56% of them supporting federal regulation. The thing with federal regulation, though, it's interesting because the AI companies, they say they also want regulation, but you do have to watch the wording of their statements. And I think what Sarah Myers West, who's managing director for the Research Center AI Now Institute, says, look at the very, very delicate phrasing that OpenAI uses when they make their calls for regulation. There's always a qualifier, like saying, we want regulation for artificial general intelligence, which, Jacob, you've pointed out many times, is the next version after generative AI. We would get to AGI, artificial general intelligence. So that's something they're saying. We want regulation for something that doesn't exist yet, and or for models that exceed a particular threshold, thus excluding everything that they have already come out with for commercial use. So I thought it's interesting that you've got to pay attention to the wording of these companies when they're saying, yeah, we also want regulation. What do Americans want? I mean, 56% of them say they support federal regulation. 72% of American voters say they want to slow down in the development of AI. That's versus just 8% who prefer speeding it up, according to new polling from think tank AI Policy Institute and YouGov. So Americans seem to want to slow things down here. Back in March, there was a letter, the open letter, co-signed by Elon Musk and thousands of other people in the AI community demanding a pause in AI research. A British newspaper, The Guardian, was reminding us of that. So it seems like the industry had called for a bit of slowdown. People are calling for a bit of slowdown. Any chance of that at all? Or is it just kind of full throttle at this point? And that's really just PR speak, so to, you know, for the companies, and something that's going to be ignored for the masses.
Yeah, I don't see an intentional type of slowdown happening. I see an indirect slowdown potentially happening just because of these challenges, and also because of, like, the chip shortage, for example, is having an impact on the pace of model training at this point. So those types of things could slow it down, but I don't see it as being like an industry or regulatory driven initiative where, okay, this technology is advancing so fast, let's slow it down. I don't think there's any sign of that. Not that public opinion doesn't have a sway, but I think at this point, it's important to remember that lot of people don't even really know about generative AI. There's, I would say, a significant number of Americans that aren't really familiar with ChatGPT, haven't used it. Maybe they've heard the name, and but have, you know, dove into what it's all about.
Yep.
At the same time, you know, I think what we might end up seeing is that, you know, the enterprise and tech companies are, of course, very excited, and investors especially, very excited about AI because of the economic value. But I don't think the average person is going to learn about generative AI and think, oh, I'm going to get rich off this technology. And so I think we're going to see public opinion definitely kind of sway towards this end of, you know, really wanting to see a slowdown, wanting to see the most responsible kind of AI development possible from companies. And that eventually could put pressure on the government to do more than it's doing now.
You make a good point. Most people haven't used it. So how do Americans know what they want from AI, or how can they understand what they're talking about enough to say, we do want to slow down and we do want it to be sped up? You pointed out overall, not many people have used it, but half of those under 40 have used an AI chatbot, but just one in 10 over 60 have, according to a June Blue Labs poll. So I think that's a really good point. Finally, folks, Jacob, you recently wrote that the generative AI frenzy could face a 2024 reality check. How so?
Well, some are saying that the sector is way overhyped, and there's some evidence that this could be the case. I mean, the tools are out, they've been commercially deployed, but it doesn't mean that companies are actually making a profit, you know, off of it. For example, Microsoft has been losing money on its GitHub Copilot, its autonomous coding software, on average $20 a month per user and up to $80 per month per user. So significant.
Losing
money. Google has had to raise its prices on AI tools it's making available through the cloud for similar reasons. AWS, Amazon Web Services, has gotten complaints from customers that its prices are too high. And it's a difficult thing because the cost of training models, deploying models, is very high for companies. And so there's a threshold at which people want to pay for tools that haven't been perfected yet. I'm not completely convinced that there's going to be this crisis for the sector come 2024. What this all really depends on is high performance, efficient, low power consuming AI chips. And that's where a lot of investment is going into. I mean, NVIDIA has plans for new chips coming out next year. Even the AI companies themselves are developing those chips. More players are getting into the AI chip race. And so I think what we're going to see next year is a lot of new chips come on the market to try and bring down the cost of model training and deployment to kind of help the sector become more profitable.
So we're going to skip the halftime report because I want to end with a question for you, Garjo. And it's going back to marketers using generative AI and this idea that the creative at some point might start to feel quite, for lack of a better word, samey. And so what I mean by that is, so the reason we have different creative in marketing today is because different companies employ different people with different ideas. Whereas if marketers eventually end up using one of, say, a handful of generative AI tools, will everyone's output start to look similar? And so Tinuiti's practice lead of emerging technology, Neerish Prasad, he was saying that, quote, if these AI systems become ubiquitous, there's a looming danger of brands all having highly similar creative, which leads to a homogenous brand landscape, close quote. Is that a possibility here? If you have all these marketers using a handful of tools, a small collection of tools, that the output's all going to start to look quite similar? Or is it pulling from so many places that that's not really possible?
I think at the very start, you might see the similarities. Once they do refine these tools, however, and get more input, maybe by sourcing original work from, you know, photographers, artists, things that have a certain look and a certain soul to them, you know, then it's only going to be as good as the source material that it's copying from, I think. But you do see that now, like when you do, you know, certain prompts, the results are kind of predictable in a sense. You get to see similar elements across different tools, right?
Interesting. All right, gents, we'll leave the first half there. We'll move straight to the second. Today in other news, ChatGPT can now give real-time information and what is a PC with artificial intelligence inside of it capable of? Story one, ChatGPT can now give real-time information, putting publishers on high alert, suggests our briefing's analyst Daniel Konstantinovich. The chatbot, ChatGPT can now access up-to-date content from the internet, whereas before it could only access information from 2021 and earlier. Now it can pull from what happened just a second ago. ChatGPT can now provide real-time answers and a link to its sources. But the concern is that users may be unlikely to click through after getting the answers they were looking for. So you ask it something, it just gives you the answer, and here's a link to the source, but I don't need that link because you already told me. The feature is available to paying users, but will eventually be available to all. Jacob, how much out of 10 do you think ChatGPT will hurt publishers?
Yeah, at this point, I'm going to give it about a 6-level threat.
Okay.
It really depends on performance. I'm not giving it higher than that because I think there's an element of trust here. I think people do want to get their information from trusted sources, and generative AI at this point, I don't think it's risen to that level of trust in people's minds yet. However, 6 is a pretty significant threat level, and I think it is an existential threat. What companies face here is a potential reduction in overall website traffic for, you know, publishers in particular, a loss of ad revenue, loss of subscription revenue. When they get less foot traffic, they're getting less user data. There's the potential for spread of misinformation by the chatbots. So there's a lot of threats here, and I think it's a serious one, but it's not a very near-term threat because of the performance issue and then because of the trust issue.
Okay. Story 2. Garjo, you recently wrote that the PC industry, personal computers, is betting on AI features to overcome its sales slump. You explain that as global PC sales continue to decelerate. I don't know why I just explained what PC stands for. I'm so sorry. Just move past it. You explain that as global PC sales continue to decelerate, HP, Lenovo, and Dell are adding generative AI features to the next generation of laptops, desktops, and servers. HP and Lenovo, you point out, both said their AI PCs for general availability could hit shelves July 2024, so next summer or early 2025, according to the Register. But Garjo, what can we expect AI PCs to do differently?
So I think the biggest advantage of on-device AI is reduced latency. The PCs, you know, running neural networks on board will be able to do things in real time without having to access the cloud. There's also a huge security upside for this because we know that companies...
We know everyone uses the same password. Yes.
That, and they always say, you can use AI, but don't use, you know, our official documents or any business information on the AI because you can't put it out there.
Right.
So that's going to change because, you know, these AI PCs will be able to be locked down behind company firewalls, and they will have access to all, you know, the company's data, which again, it's going to be huge for privacy and I think huge for adoption.
Yeah. That's all we've got time for, unfortunately. Gents, thank you so much as always. Thank you to Garjo.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yes, sir. Thank you to Jacob.
Thanks, Marcus. Thanks, Garjo.
And thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, and Stuart, who runs the team. Thanks to everyone for listening in to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Intuit MailChimp. You can tune in tomorrow to hang out with host Sarah Lebo on the Reimagining Retail show as she speaks with VP of Content Susie David Canyon and Senior Analyst on the retail team Zach Stambor, all about the genius of Costco.